Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today from Western Sydney University in Australia. An article published in the current British Medical Journal Open, zinc might help stave off respiratory infection symptoms and cut illness duration. That's good news. I'll go into it in depth. A little more classroom on the air today about anti-aging. I think most of the people in this audience would appreciate that information. Also, from Ulrich John of University in Medicine in Germany, comes a study about, well, drinking alcohol. Remember when we were told to have a glass of alcohol a day keeps your heart healthy? And, well, just think of how many people drank every day because their doctor told them so. Quote, that might not work, says new study. And no, it not only might not work, it doesn't work, an article in PLOS Medicine. I'll give you the background on that. Also, quercetin helps to reduce the risk of pancreatic cancer, University of Hawaii and University of Southern California. It's all about, well, it's about the flavanols. And when you eat an apple or an onion, you're getting quercetin, lots of it. More on that as well. But most of the time we'll be spent today in the health segment on a University of California study on the psychology of successful aging. Really interesting study, and I'll add something in on that. But also today, we have a very interesting interview. Because of the time delay, I was asked, instead of doing it live in Germany, could it be done by pre-record? So we just finished pre-recording it. So I'm going to play one segment today. It's really for the Progressive Commentary Hour for next Tuesday night. And it's with one of the world's leading authorities on COVID. And what he has to say in this 1 hour, I'm going to play 10 minutes of today, is powerful. And you're not going to be able to, you know, just push him aside as a nobody in the field. 50 years as a practicing medical doctor, board certified in immunology, virology, epidemiology, and molecular biology. 300 articles published in the peer-reviewed literature. Full tenure professor at two universities, a senior research fellow at the Max Planck Institute in virology. So this is where he lives. And we're going to talk about this, where we're at in the pandemic. He was on a year ago, so we want to see what he's learned in the last year, that he has good quality peer-reviewed scientific literature to back up his statements. So that's coming up today. And his name is Dr. Suchartit, that's S-U-C-H-A-R-I-T, Bhakti, B-H-A-K-D-I. He's an American-born physician trained in Germany. He's been in the medical field for over 50 years, received his medical degree at the University of Bonn, but his postdoctoral work at Max Planck in immunology and epigenetics, also a professor at the Institute of Medical Microbiology at German Gressen University. And he was the chair of the Medical Microbiology Department at the University of Mainz, one of the most respected institutions in the world. So, you'll be surprised what he says. And this is for all those people who want to condemn anyone who has yet to receive the vaccine. What if you were on the wrong side of the equation? What if everything you had believed in and sincerely believed in was wrong? What if the information that you have been not only abiding by, but promoting and propagating to other people was dangerous misinformation? What if you were the problem, not the unvaccinated? You hear what he has to say on this. Also today, we have Kim Iverson, and again, liberal person, and she's saying fire Fauci already. And then we have someone who I don't agree with on everything, but on this one, he is right. Brendan O'Neill, he's a firebrand. He is politically a Marxist, but he is a smart thinker on social issues. And we just finished this COP26 conference. And of course, nothing that was important got done. Nothing that was mandatory got done. Everything is voluntary. By the time the governments decide to slow down their economic growth in order to facilitate a cleaner environment, it'll be way too late. It's way too late right now. So he says these people are hypocrites, narcissists, and virtue signalers. It's only 3 minutes long. Also, busting open the CDC pregnancy vaccine safety, brand new study. And this is a powerful one because this, is, again, is a medical doctor who read the study and then said everything the media is reporting on it is wrong. And this person is right. Excuse me, this is not a medical doctor. This is Naomi Wolf. So you'll hear from her today. It's a short segment. But for all of the people in this audience who are pregnant and saying, well, okay, the latest study shows that the vaccines will not interfere with my pregnancy, do your own homework. Because 89% of the women in one study who were pregnant in their third trimester, they miscarried. But the study only examined the first two trimesters. So once again, it was like what Monsanto did. They did a lot of studies showing no mammary, no cancer mammary tumors in the rats up to 3 months. Well, then someone, Dr. Charlini, said, well, what would happen if we went the whole life of the rats? The tumors started coming after 3 months, and then it just got worse. Again, this is all manipulation. And Tim, time permitting, we will also have my interview. So that's our program. Let's go right to it. And the first thing we're going to take a look at is things we can do to get healthy right now, no matter what you've done in the past. In effect, a lot of things you can do, depending upon how many things you do and to what degree your knowledge of what to do in the right manner, putting the pieces of the puzzle together, because there is no magic silver bullet. In anything in life, everything is a composite, the intricate interconnectivity of all positive energies. So zinc is just one of these. And Western Sydney University found that zinc can help stave off the symptoms of respiratory tract infections like coughing, congestion, sore throat, and cut illness duration. That's important. Now, if you take it with vitamin C, which this study didn't do, and vitamin D3, which this study didn't do, and then you could even cut it further. So that's important, simple and to the point. So a lot of people now are going to suffer from colds, flu, and sinusitis, pneumonia, COVID-19. Now, most infections, if you don't have comorbidities, will clear up if you treat them properly, use the proper protocol, both prophylactic, preventative, and medical. And what's nice now is that the mainstream doctors who are treating COVID patients early, three stages, early to stop the symptoms, they can generally do that within 24 to 48 hours, depending upon if the person is caught right at the beginning and doesn't have other comorbidities. And they have about 22 different drugs they can use, but they're using now vitamin C, vitamin D, quercetin, zinc, manganese. They're using all these. That's good. So now if they really wanted to stop these patients from going further, they give them intravenous vitamin C and also ozone, but they're not ready for that yet. But still, and then the second part is when maybe someone has showed up at the clinic or your medical office and they had symptoms and the symptoms are getting worse, so you got a week delay. Then there's another protocol, and it's simply using the same medicines but using them at higher doses, like what you would use to prevent COVID with ivermectin is 3 milligrams twice a week. Hydroxychloroquine, 200 milligrams once a week. But once you have symptoms, you change that. It goes up to about 12 milligrams and every day of ivermectin. And then if you're advanced in a hospital, it still saves lives. All the studies show this. And yet now the hospitals are giving it. This is the politics. I'm going to deal with that. A special report today. So what you want is to understand this. zinc plays a key role in your immunity, anti-inflammatory, tissue injury repair, lowering your blood pressure, and the responses to a lack of oxygen in the tissues. So it's just a really multifaceted nutrient. It's a mineral, macro mineral. Generally 15 to 50 milligrams a day. If you have no comorbidities, 15 to 20 milligrams. If you have comorbidities, then you've got to go up to around 50 milligrams. So that's the latest on zinc. Now, probably one-third of Americans at one point, adults, were drinking alcohol because their doctor said it was good for them. And everybody was right. It was good for them. And everybody was following the science, which showed that it was good for them. All the medicine was wrong. All the people were wrong. Your liver, your kidney, your brain, and your heart suffered irreparable damage because of that stupidity. And when I started seeing this, because I'd written a book on alcohol, and back in the early 1970s. So I wanted to find out, where did all this misinformation, how could so many people be wrong? And it all was called the French paradox, meaning in France, where people have a high-fat diet, they should have, let's say, commensurate amount of heart disease and clogged arteries, atherosclerosis, arteriosclerosis, etc. They didn't. They seemed to have a nation of pretty healthy people, and yet they smoked. And the idea was that, well, they drank. And because they drank with their meals, they drank wine primarily, or red wine principally, that it was the wine that had some chemical that we didn't know about in it that protected the body from oxidative stress from the alcohol, so, or from the bad diet. So I went over to France, and I have a friend that lived in France, and I said, could you take me around to the different communities, suburban areas and farms? Let me talk with people. So I spent about 2 weeks there, every day, early to late, speaking with people. And it was true. The French, like the Italians, like the Spanish, like to drink wine with their meal, their main meal of the day, and their smaller meal in the evening. But what didn't get recorded was that a lot of the people drinking wine in the country make their own wine. It's a ferment. It's a prebiotic. It's like apple cider vinegar, but it's just going to a further stage. And anytime you're doing any of these ferments, you're building up a lot of probiotics, the good bacteria, and low alcohol, generally under 2%, and that's not going to do the damage. But what I saw, what was really unique in Italy in particular, but also in France, is that fruit was considered the adequate dessert. Now, of course, when you go into the restaurants, everybody wants those beautiful and delicious, you know, French food, and I think you would not appreciate how good French cuisine and Italian cuisine is until you go to the cities and try common places, not high-end, highly referenced restaurants, just normal places. One of the best meals I've ever had was $10. Walked in, it was just on a side street. And I said, I'm a vegan, could you make me something? He said, sure. Came back and he made a crown of vegetables. It was just magnificent. There was a millet and a quinoa in the middle with a different sauce on each. And then around that was different types of vegetables, some grilled, some sauteed with different herbs. It was just delicious. I felt so embarrassed. This guy took all this time for a $10 meal. I gave him a very large tip. And he said, what's this for? I said, because I own a restaurant in New York City, and it's a vegan restaurant. And I know how much time and effort, because I'm down there every Wednesday night cooking about 400 meals. I know what you did to make this, and $10 is way below the value of that. So I'm honoring you, and I'm showing my respect for you as a chef to a chef. He just smiled. And he said, you know, you're not going to get a bad meal in Paris. And he was right. And anyhow, there's a lot of good things that I enjoyed about the Parisian culture, and their understanding of history and their intellectual acumens, they have biases, they have problems, and you don't want to talk to them about Algeria in the 1950s, then suddenly everything goes boiling hot. But and their colonies, which is another topic. But at least they're willing to talk about stuff. At least they're willing to get out and protest. Right now, just did you know last weekend there were over a million people protesting about the mandates? I mean, they really take, you know, the idea that the government works for them seriously. Compare that to the United States. All around the world, there were protests, walkouts. Not in the United States. Why not? In any case, getting back to the point, so I'm looking at tables, and every home I went into had a bowl of fruit, frequently grapes, in the middle of the table. Really cool. And these are grapes they grew themselves more often than not. But then I would want to go to the farmer's market. So my buddy said, let's go down to the farmer's market. And it starts at 3 a.m. So we get down there, and at 3 a.m. here, all these trucks from the country coming in. Now, these are not big commercial farms. These tend to be small. But the size of the farmer's market in just one community was the size of a football field. And it was enclosed. And it had hundreds of these stalls. So you would get everything fresh. And then you'd see all these people coming in. And then later, around 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock, people come on bicycles. And they would load up the stuff. The French love to get their stuff fresh every day. And they're very much into organic. They're very aware of the dangers of pesticides. And they say that fruit is what sustains us throughout the day. When we want a snack, we don't go eat a cookie, you know, or something unhealthy, we eat fruit. That's what they're encouraged. Now, not everyone does that. And not everyone is as healthy as they should be, needless to say. But that's what I began to realize. We got it wrong. And I knew that because I'd already been to London 10 years before when I wanted to meet the Europe's number one nutritionist, Dr. Yetkin. And there were three that I interviewed, all of whom were very famous. And he said, you need roughage. And then there was Burkitt of Burkitt's lymphoma. He discovered Burkitt's lymphoma, and he worked at 69 East African villages, their hospitals. And he said in his entire decades there, he never saw someone dying of stomach cancer, colorectal cancer. Heart attack was rare, because the people were lean, they had a high roughage diet. He was right. How do we translate that? We took the roughage and we refined it into fiber. And there's a big difference what happens between roughage, eating an apple, and then eating something made from an apple in the form of dehydrated fiber. And so we got that wrong, and that's why I started emphasizing people go towards a high roughage plant-based diet, around 40 to 50 grams of quality fiber per day. You do that, suddenly no more constipation. You're far less likely to have bacterial infections. You can purge out a lot of parasites with a high fiber diet, etc. And you don't see the high incidence of the itises like ileitis, colitis, etc. So then when I came back, I wrote up a report and I broadcast it. And I broadcast on a Sunday night on my ABC show. And I said, here's what I found. What the French do, and the Italians do, and the Spanish do, that protects them from sometimes having foods that are high in saturated fat, arachidonic acid, and high in meat, is that they are taking in a lot of antioxidants, what we call an ORAC. The ORAC, O-R-I-C, is the representation of how many antioxidants, how much vitamin C, et cetera, that you have in a given food. And the higher your ORAC value, the more prevention you have, the more protected you are. And that's what was shared. I said, it's not the alcohol. That's not it. We got it wrong. But no one, I mean no one, zip, not a single person from America I could find, had gone over there, spent the time, talked with the people. I went into Italy, and I talked with everyone, and I saw this. So then I started seeing the person came into my office, and he was a Wall Street lawyer, and he had some serious health problems. And I said, well, what are you doing that's unhealthy? He says, nothing. I mean, I'm on a strictly healthy diet. And he told me his diet. His diet was, it was the Atkins diet. And Bob was a close friend of mine. We were personal friends. We'd travel together. We had different diets, different approaches. But I said, that's it? He says, yeah, and I don't take a lot of vitamins because my doctor doesn't believe in them. He says, you're getting all the vitamins you need from your diet. I said, that's not possible. That's not humanly possible. Impossible. And he said, and I also drink 2 glasses of alcohol a day, keep my heart healthy. Boom, there went the red flag. What kind of alcohol? Bourbon. You know, you're taking in something that's higher than 60% alcohol twice a day? How much? Glass. You're drinking 2 full glasses of bourbon a day, and your doctor, who's a cardiologist, is saying this is a good thing? Yeah. Wow. So I called the doctor, and I explained to him, I sent him over a lot of scientific papers on the damage that alcohol does. 1 single glass of a low alcohol can destroy 1 million brain cells, 1 million heart cells, 1 million liver cells, 1 million kidney cells per drink. This guy was prematurely aging, creating massive oxidative stress because of the alcohol. Anyhow, I just wanted to share that with you because you're not going to be healthy drinking alcohol in any quantity. They got it all wrong. So there's a case where they got everything wrong. By the way, University of Hawaii and the University of Southern California have a new study where quercetin, Q-U-E-R-C-E-T-I-N, was found to make a major difference in preventing pancreatic cancer. Why? Because the more apples, the more onions that you eat, those are your 2 best sources from natural foods, you reduce your risk of pancreatic cancer. And this was published in the American Journal of Epidemiology, so that's important. Now, I'm looking at the clock, and I'm too far into the program to do the research on the psychology of successful aging, because that's going to take me about 20 minutes. I'm going to hold that for tomorrow. I'll revisit this tomorrow. But we're going to take a break, and when we come back from the break, we're going to go directly to a part of an interview that I did earlier, and with my guest, and this is just in the middle of the interview. It's a 55-minute interview. It'll play on in its entirety on Tuesday evening, but not everybody listens to the Progressive Commentary Hour. And for those of you who don't, you'll be able to hear what this man says. Now, mind you, let this man come forward and debate Fauci or any scientist or physician who believes that everything we're doing with vaccination and the protocols is correct. All right, listen to what he has to say, because he can back it all up. Back in a moment.
First, and I'm concentrating now on the vaccination program, because as I said before, I think that this vaccination agenda is the ultimate goal of those people who have planned this. They want these vaccines to be fully authorized. Why do they want that? Because once the COVID-19 vaccine has full authorization, then the following vaccines against the so-called variants or mutants or blah, blah, blah will be automatically authorized without any more clinical trials. And then nothing that has not been accepted as an adverse serious reaction will be accepted for them. So, simply speaking, at the moment, if you get vaccinated and you die of a cerebral venous clot in your brain, and many have died, not so many that people would become generally alarmed, because it is a rare event that you will die of it. And if you die of it in the next years with the next vaccines, you may get maybe a compensation for it, because it would be accepted as a serious adverse reaction for which someone has to pay, okay? But if, for instance, you have Guillain-Barré syndrome, or you get a paralysis, or you have a permanent condition of your nervous system that is not now recognized because not enough people have looked at it, not enough people have said, yes, there is a connection, then that will never be recognized, despite the fact that the next vaccines will all be authorized automatically. So this means that liability, no one is going to be held responsible. And if you get that damn shot and drop down dead from a lung embolism that is not recognized today as a consequence of the vaccination, it's your tough luck. If you die because you have a heart attack, it's your tough luck. Or if you have a brain hemorrhage, it's your tough luck. All right. So this is what they're aiming for. And my great fear, our great fear, is that they aim to get this done this month. This month. And as you know, the FDA has already fully authorized one of the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccines. Weirdly enough and interestingly enough, not the vaccine that is being used in America at the moment. So what this means is that our great fear, our terror, our anxiety is that this full authorization is going to come from the authorities in America, in England, in Europe, blah, blah, blah. And with that, our fate is going to be sealed. Our fate, yours and mine and our families, because then they are going to start mandating this vaccination and saying, if you don't get vaccinated. And the Danes have said today, if no more Danes get vaccinated, they're going to go back to the lockdown. So what they really are aiming for is to get this vaccination done in the world. As Bill Gates declared over 1.5 years ago, he openly declared that, and our so-called Chancellor Merkel in German Merkel said that this pandemic will only end after 85% of the population is vaccinated. Now this is so revealing that you can't understand why people accept this. And the mainstream, of course, are all bought. They are corrupt as hell. And we all know this. And that's why they're not reporting it. Because if they report it, then they are going to go broke. Okay? Now, let's get back to brass tacks. What are the facts? There are three. Fact number one is this damn vaccination is not necessary. Why? Because it is now known and scientifically established that all people, virtually all people in the world, have a background immunity against this new virus because the virus is not really new. I said this 1 year ago to you, and it has turned out to be entirely true. I have to say that nothing that we have written or said has turned out to be wrong up to now. So listen very well. We said 1 year ago that the population is not endangered because we have background immunity because our immune system cross-reacts with normal coronaviruses, which have been with us over the centuries, the thousands of years that man has existed. And the immune system has a long, long memory and is extremely effective. So this is the reason why people with no pre-existing illnesses, they simply will not die because of this virus. It's different with tetanus, for instance. You know, tetanus, anyone in the world can get tetanus if he's not vaccinated, because the bug, the bacterium, is everywhere in the soil of all the planet, all the countries on Earth. And if you go around sticking Earth into a deep wound, you can get tetanus. And if you're going to get tetanus, your chances to die are about as big as 100 years ago, namely 90% to 100%.
He suggested that you get a tetanus vaccine. Mind you, he is pro-vaccine. He's worked on vaccines. He's also a professor of immunology, so he knows what he's talking about. After 50 years of studying laboratory work, research, and clinical practice, he is laying out the story that we have completely rejected the idea that our bodies are capable of fighting back. And therefore, in the subsequent interview, he discusses what you have to bring into your body to build up your immune system. Remember what he said, in a person is totally healthy. But the trouble is, we're not totally healthy. We are a nation where some people are very healthy, but the average person, the average adult, and many children have multiple comorbidities. And those comorbidities can really do harm. And so therefore, his approach is in prevention, and first and foremost, and then using existing medications to help stop the spike protein from causing the micro hemorrhaging and the micro clots around the body. And he was one of the first to focus upon that and show the science of it. In fact, one of his videos, he does the full 2 hours on just showing what happens when the injection goes into your body. I mean, he's that kind of scholar. But you have to listen to the full interview to appreciate everything he's saying. That will be played in its entirety Tuesday night. And by the way, to let you know how serious this is, and again, if you want to know, his name is Dr. Sucharit Bhakti, and that's Bhakdi, from the Max Planck Institute of Immunology. So virology, immunology, microbiology, and clinical practice, 300 articles in the peer-reviewed literature, he knows what he's talking about. So it's important. But also look around before I go to something in a moment here that should wake people up a little bit. And that is, this is just in. I mentioned this briefly yesterday. Quote, people in the United Kingdom who post false information about vaccines could be jailed for 2 years. New law criminalizes, quote, knowingly false communications, end quote. Quote, the online safety bill, described as, quote, the flagship legislation to combat abuse and hatred on the internet, has faced fierce criticism from civil liberties groups for its broad overreach. The law would create, quote, a knowingly false communications offense, which, according to the Times, quote, will criminalize those who send or post a message they know to be false with the intention to cause, quote, emotional, psychological, or physical harm to the likely audience, end quote. Government sources gave the example of anti-vaxxers spreading false information they know to be untrue. Well, just imagine, Joe McCarthy wasn't able to succeed in this type of draconian effort. And where are the people who believe in free speech? Because there are now over 100,000 medical doctors, all pro-vaccine, and scientists, all pro-vaccine, with impeccable credentials, who are questioning everything about the vaccine, its safety, its efficacy, and the lockdowns. Every one of those people, by this law, could be shown to be guilty and be arrested and put in jail if they were in Great Britain for 2 years. And now watch other countries do something similar, and already Australia has something similar in the works. You thought this couldn't get worse? It's getting worse. So then who's going to speak out about these problems if they know that they could go to jail if in case they did this? So I'm just telling you, it's really bad. And so I want to share this, and I'll keep sharing more with you. And by the way, here's something else. Do you remember I said, when a person has an autoimmune condition, let's say lupus, and what happens is they were excluded from all the clinical trials, phase 3 clinical trials. Now that's with people who are the guinea pigs. So then they excluded people with lupus, cancer, heart disease, dementia, Alzheimer's, pregnant women, lactating women. A whole group of people were excluded. They weren't allowed in the study. But then when the study was complete, mainly with healthy people, they said, now, the very people we excluded, you must take the vaccine. Now think of that for a moment. Just wrap your mind around that for a moment. You're not allowed to end the test, the study, because you've got a medical condition, comorbidity, because that would skew the results. They wanted positive results, so they just cherry-pick positive people. So now you're not allowed in the study, but you're demanded to take the vaccine. That is criminal, in my opinion. This is the latest to support this. Quote, this is from the Proceedings of the American College of Rheumatology, Atlanta. I'm quoting verbatim. Nearly one-third of lupus patients in one study had low responses to COVID-19 vaccines. Well, it's already low, meaning very little. But in this case, this is an autoimmune condition. So they're not responding well. It's not helping them. All right? So you're going to do what? You're going to say that these people need to have another shot and a booster shot and a booster shot? They already have a very damaged immune system, and you're just going to keep probing and probing and probing that immune system to a collapse. So what are we now seeing? We're seeing the older people with comorbidity, a group of them, are getting COVID vaccines, didn't have COVID, they had autoimmune conditions, now they're dying. Well, and look how long it's taken the media to pay attention to this at all, and they have it. Now I've got a question for you, and I'm going to share something with you, and this came to me last night. What is the motive? What is the motive when you have millions, hundreds of billions of people worldwide who've used drugs, FDA-approved drugs, parasitic medication, etc., and they're alive and well. Whole countries have used it when they didn't have the vaccines, and they have better outcomes than countries who were fully vaccinated, like Israel. And what about Israel? Older people there, it's almost 100% vaccinated. Now with three vaccines and demanding a fourth vaccine, or the first three vaccines they took will no longer count, and they'll get their green card, vaccine card, rescinded. Therefore, they can't go into places, can't work. Well, at what point do you realize your experiment has failed? Four vaccines, and now the number one group of people going to hospital are vaccinated? Number one people spreading are vaccinated? So now you no longer control the narrative. Now you can control it as long as you can control the media, and you control the media, so therefore you control the narrative, but you can't control the science because it's going to get out, and now it's getting out. Whistleblowers are taking it out also. So why is it that drugs that we know from the hundreds and hundreds of studies, clinical studies, published in peer-reviewed literature, with thousands of scientists working on these studies. We have all their names. We have every scientist working on every one of these studies with hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin. I posted it. We post all of our evidence for good scholarship. Why would you not just dismiss it? You would penalize. You would send out from the state medical boards in every one of the 50 states a letter telling doctors, if you use ivermectin or hydroxychloroquine, you will lose your license. We tell every hospital, you cannot use these. And yet when hospitals have used them, it saved lives. So I believe I have a motive, but mine is just a subjective hypothesis. I cannot prove it at this moment. I'd like your thoughts. Listen to what I'm going to share with you, please. Almost 11 months have passed since the COVID-19 vaccines were launched upon the public. Sufficient time has now passed where we're capable of addressing some critical uncertainties that were too speculative to answer earlier. Since the time the pandemic was declared in the spring of 2020, many continue to question why health officials' efforts to treat COVID-19 cases with inexpensive FDA-approved medications that were widely available, despite only showing potential efficacy in the beginning, were ignored outright, then condemned, then attacked. In fact, falsely putting articles about the dangers of these in the New England Journal of Medicine, the Journal of the American Medical Association, and the British Medical Journal. And they had to rescind those. They had to take them out. They made mistakes. That wasn't by accident. Although some of these drugs, notably hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin, had yet to reach any consensus of effectiveness against coronaviruses, there was nevertheless some strong clinical, meaning the doctors using it, evidence to warrant their use. Quite frankly, there were no other alternatives other than the irresponsible measures to rely on quarantining patients and eventually admission to emergency rooms and being placed on ventilators. Nothing else in between. Rather, from its outset, Anthony Fauci and the National Institutes of Allergies and Infectious Disease embarked on the media circuit to promise Americans that everything was being done within the medical agency's means to get a vaccine on the market. One mass vaccinations were in effect, meaning when they were underway, then we were promised that the SARS-2 virus would be defeated and life would return to normal. You remember that? To accomplish this medical feat, it meant allowing the vaccine makers to leap over every regulatory hurdle that would assure these products were in fact effective and safe. Sadly, this priming of the American public, however, proved not only to be completely erroneous and grossly negligent, but equally deceptive. Subsequent scrutiny of the horrible decisions by our federal officials and physicians, and medical researchers and journalists and health activists is forcing a growing faction in the medical community to ask why Fauci, the American Medical Association, and hospital clinics failed to propose a two-prong approach, one that I've been advocating from the very beginning and have written many articles on. The first would have been preventative. Relying upon thousands of peer-reviewed studies, the public could have been steered towards strengthening their immune systems and becoming healthier by increasing nutrient intake and changing their diets, principally to a healthy plant-based diet. There is hard scientific evidence that selenium, zinc, vitamin C and D, and quercetin, astragalus, and other natural compounds have either immune-building or antiviral properties, or in some cases, both. There are also many studies showing that those most susceptible to serious SARS-2 infections are also nutrient deficient. Second, an emergency national health program for those suffering with severe medical conditions and with weak immune system would have easily been mobilized to dramatically reduce COVID-19 deaths due to comorbidities, in effect, improving the quality of hundreds of millions of Americans' quality of life who are obese, overweight, diabetic, and suffer from cardiovascular disease and immune-compromised conditions would have prevented perhaps the majority of SARS-2-associated deaths. But we didn't do that. The scientific evidence is indisputable that these individuals' health is highly compromised by infection. Yet not a single concerted effort was made by the Department of Health and Human Services and the Surgeon General to address this problem. If any intervention were to have been mandated, it should have targeted educating people to strengthen their immune systems, change their lifestyles, and most importantly, protect those who we knew then were at most risk, older individuals with multiple comorbidities. But we didn't. For the first time in modern medical history, frontline medical professionals treating patients were dissuaded from relying on their own clinical experience to treat COVID-19 patients. Rather, they were consistently instructed to follow the government's recommendations, which are scientifically disputed. Many physicians saw these rules as grossly misguided. The standard protocol would have been for doctors to treat patients immediately by whatever means they had available. However, they were discouraged from following their own ethical conscience. Instead, asymptomatic COVID-positive patients were simply sent home to isolate themselves without any prophylactic treatment. The health officials argued that this is a new virus and nothing will stop it. Therefore, their only option is to rush through the development of vaccines and fund companies to create novel patented drugs. As the nation waited, the cost of lives could have been really easily saved, generated an illusion of a pandemic that threatened life of each and every American. To hasten Pfizer and Moderna's gene therapy vaccines, regulatory obstacles were removed. The CDC and the FDA created faux advisory panels stacked with pharmaceutical officials and academics beholden to Big Pharma's funding and contracts. Vaccine reviews were stripped down to a bare minimum, and lengthy clinical trials to validate efficacy and safety were ruled unnecessary. A process that would have taken any vaccine based upon the older, time-proven technology 7 or more years was reduced to less than a year. And this was for a gene technology that was completely experimental and which had a dismal history of failure in earlier attempts. Furthermore, tens of millions of Americans were disallowed to qualify for the clinical trials, including those who were pregnant, lactating persons with cancer, with cardiovascular disease, autoimmune illnesses, dementia, and others. The duplicity was that only the healthiest people would be enrolled in the trials. However, when the vaccine was approved, it was being recommended for everyone without exception. That's unscientific. To compound the problem, the large majority of Americans' physicians remained silent. We have over 1 million, and they failed to confront the irrationality of the federal health officials' decisions. But it gets worse. The vaccine makers lobbied for complete immunity from damages and deaths caused by their experimental injections. Without any objection, it was granted to them. At the same time, physicians were using multiple combinations of inexpensive, all-patented drugs and immune-modulating supplementation with enormous success in treating COVID cases. Physicians in other nations where treatment is less restricted, such as Spain and Italy, were sharing data and communications with American physicians about what works and doesn't for treating COVID-19 patients. Those who have been using these treatments, now being denigrated by Fauci and his minions, are having remarkable positive results. A database of all reporting on this, especially ivermectin against COVID-19 infections, now reports 65 randomized controlled trials with an average of 67% improvement for early infections and 86% average as a prophylactic in preventing symptoms. Among the 128 total studies, only 6 were discouraging. Yet it is this small 6 number of studies that are being emphasized as evidence to discourage prescribing ivermectin. A Johns Hopkins University analyst had concluded that a reason why many African countries had very few to near zero fatalities was because of widespread deployment of ivermectin. The worrisome question is why the peer-reviewed research and empirical data clearly confirms the effectiveness of ivermectin and other off-patented medications that the American government has and even threatened physicians who prescribed it. A hypothesis may be drawn that the hasty emergency use authorization of the COVID-19 vaccines may not have been granted, and here's the key, if it were shown that there were other therapeutic interventions that had reliable clinical and scientific support to accomplish the same prophylactic and therapeutic results. Consequently, if Fauci or any other federal health director were to acknowledge these drugs' efficacy, which would have also reduced the likelihood that novel drugs such as remdesivir could legitimately be authorized, widespread vaccination would be clinically unnecessary in order to protect the enormous potential profits now being reaped by Pfizer, Moderna, and J&J. Cheaper and accessible medications had to be dismissed and condemned out of hand. The FDA rules require that a new medical intervention needs to be shown more effective and safe than existing licensed products already available. The most compelling conclusion is that the entire charade orchestrated by Fauci was to protect vaccine makers to exploit the pandemic for windfall profits. The current epidemiology suggests that malevolent narrative driven by avarice and hubris may have cost at least 500,000 preventable deaths. It seems inconceivable at times that the thousands of medical personnel in our health agencies can all be wrong, but they've been wrong in the past. many times. It begs the question about motive. For certain, the U.S. has been on a long trajectory towards moral bankruptcy. There are many reasons to account for this decline, but one is the level of greed that now permeates Orthodox medicine and messianic beliefs in vaccinations. Once a person comprehends the faith-based cult that fuels the conventional medical ascendancy and domination over their lives, the missing pieces begin to fall into place. Power, profit, and privilege. The blind faith in the humanitarian value of disciplines and careers are the cement that holds the medical establishment together. And they have the capacity to act with impunity, similar to generals who send willing soldiers into battle, and despite the collateral damage of civilian deaths, because it's the mission that matters, not human lives. From this perspective, under the leadership of our federal health generals, such as Fauci and Walensky, at the CDC, the war against COVID is turning into history's greatest medical tragedy, as was the Vietnam War, a horrible misguided failure. We should never lose sight that our health officials are human beings and therefore vulnerable to making gross errors of judgment. This accurately defines Fauci's illustrious career, which has been built upon miscalculations and disastrous blunders. Know the decrees of our health officials on high are not infallible. Every effort now needs to be undertaken to undermine the virus of vanity infecting the halls of Washington. This may be our last recourse to recover a culture of medical integrity that was ripped away from us. Your thoughts, 888-874-4888. Understand what I'm asking you. We have tens of thousands of physicians and tens of thousands of scientists who are saying we could stop this, we could promote natural immunity in those who are healthy, we can protect those who are most vulnerable with medical protocols and lifestyle intervention, but none of that is being allowed, because then that would mean there would be no legal justification for the vaccines. And no one can tell you how safe or effective the vaccines are for at least another 3 to 4 years. And what we're also seeing is now new statistics are coming in showing you the damage done that is not being accurately reported on the adverse effects and deaths from these vaccinations. When all is said and done, I believe that we will see a horrifying picture. No one will be held accountable. We'll just simply say, as we did with Vietnam and with Iraq, and with all the other disasters, well, lesson learned? No, we don't learn lessons this way, not on at the cost of human life. I'm going to take a quick break and come back. We're going to have to say goodbye to our WBA audience. It's going to the news. We'll continue on at PRN.FM to the top of the hour. And as soon as your call comes in, I'll put you right on the air. Back in a moment. And we're going to go to Ronald in Long Island. Ronald, your turn.
Yes, good afternoon, Gary. About 50 years ago, when the New York Times came out with the Pentagon Papers, they were so proud that they took on the United States government at that time. And their New York Times slogan, "Without fear or favor," well, today, is the New York Times afraid of Pfizer? Is the New York Times afraid of Johnson & Johnson? And what if in a few years the number of people that die as a result of complications of the vaccines that they've received become so enormous that it can no longer be hidden? What if 100 million people in the United States die? How can they cover that up?
Okay, well, first, let us look at how many people have died on a mathematical model projecting based upon how many people have received the vaccines and how many of those are most likely to be suffering from comorbidities and therefore have the highest incidence of side effects and or death. And it wouldn't be 100 million, it'd be far less. But even at far less, let's just say for argument's sake, after 3 years from now, we have a total of 300,000 dead. They will still turn that around and say, but we had 250 million vaccines, so for that small number of deaths, it was worth it. It stopped the pandemic. No matter what you concur from the outcome, they will always control the narrative, and therefore they will have the first and last word on it. They also control Congress, and they control the scientific community because they control where grants go, except for the independent scientists. Appreciate your call. Thank you. Who else do we have up? Okay, I'll try to take another call here in a moment, two more calls if possible. Just want to mention something that I think is going to be very good. Never done this before. We're going to have a reunion in the middle of January in Florida. No cost. This is not a, you know, this is not a clinical study. This is for people who have been in and raced at some point since 1975 with the Natural Living Running and Walking Club. And to get people back into shape, to get people back into life. I met a person over the weekend who has just let his health go. And he's successful in his career, not successful in his personal life. And he's kind of morbidly obese at this point. And he says he's just ashamed of himself, but there was no motivation. And he said he used to love coming out to the park on Sunday mornings, and did so for 3 years, then joined the group, about 70 of us, who went over and did the first London Marathon. It was a wonderful time. And that camaraderie meant a lot to him. But now he's looked at what happened and looked at himself, and he says he's got to change. And he said, had you ever thought about bringing people together so they could work out again and, you know, have their life stories and where they've been for the last 10, 20, 30, 40 years? I just thought about it. I thought it was a good idea. And it's free, but you got to be in the group, and you've got to have done a race. All right? Those are the two qualifications. Then you fly down. If there's room here, fine. If not, at a hotel. But I'm going to take it on myself to pay for the food, and then we're going to have meditation, Tai Chi, Qigong, water aerobics, track work, gym work, and the bike work. So it'll be fun. You'll call this number if you qualify, 917-434-4557. 917-434-4557. Again, 917-434-4557. Now, Rodney, who do we have on the line now? We'll take one last call. I'm looking at the clock. Sorry. For those of you who just called in, you caught in a little late. We're at the end of our program. But we'll have more tomorrow. Have a nice day, everyone.